Mark Francis, the minor league phenom, makes his first major league start.
You don't see a lot of number one picks come out of Canada.
I was really excited.
Swung on and missed, and a strikeout for Jeff Francis' first big league victory.
He is dealing, and he's making them go after his pitch.
Playing in a World Series for the first time, it's something special.
He's become Colorado's top winner 3 years in a row.
He's getting an opportunity to represent his country and loving it.
Welcome back to the Canadian Baseball Network podcast, and thank you to Rocky Mountain High Note for that compilation. But today we have a man who really needs no introduction, but you know I'm going to give him one anyway. He's an 11-year MLB vet, a gold medalist during the 2015 Pan Am Games, a pitcher Canadians know coast to coast. It's former Rocky, Jeff Francis. And I mean, I'm not entirely sure where to start here, Jeff. We're going to cover a lot of ground. But how about we start with where you are now? How does an MLB vet like yourself, after 11 years in the league, live? And what's retirement like on a day-to-day basis for you?
Well, I live in London, Ontario. I moved out here early on in my professional career. Did most of my training here in the wintertime while I was still playing. So I think kind of naturally my family just kind of settled here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went to school at London, actually. It's a great city to live in, great city to settle down, right?
Yeah, it's a good place to raise a family, no doubt.
Yeah, and how difficult of a transition was it? I mean, not going to spring training for the first time in almost a decade must have been a different feeling when you first hung up the cleats.
It was different. You get used to the rhythm sort of spring and winter, but it was an adjustment the first year. It was more of a relief for me, really. I think the last year I spent playing, I felt overmatched. I didn't feel like I had the skills that I once did, and I knew the end was near. So For me not to be on the field the next year was, I call it a bit of a relief.
Yeah, and it was just about that time to settle down with your family after that much year, after that much time in the league, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah, that's a big part of it, right? I mean, not to have to move around anymore and have your life shrunk to what you can fit in the back of a car on a day's notice.
Yeah.
That's a big adjustment. And, certainly to be home in the summer, I hadn't had a summer to myself in, probably 20 years. So, that was a welcome adjustment too. Just, being able to have a barbecue with your family or, not worrying about where your next road trip was, that was a different feeling.
Yeah, and as we're talking about family and your three kids, have you ever had the opportunity to manage or coach them, or are you at least looking to do so? I'm sure your services would be highly sought after.
Yeah, I'm getting into the coaching now. My daughter is 9. She plays ringette in the winter and is playing softball actually for the first time this year, so I'm going to help coach. I do coach my son's baseball team. He's a pitching machine baseball, so... I think any parent with any kind of enthusiasm and organization can do that and should do that if they can. I don't think my baseball skills will be too tested coaching a 7-year-old house.
and obviously coaching is kind of an aspect that you've fallen in love with. I mean, right now as well, you're back with the program that you came up with the junior national team as an assistant pitching coach. You've kind of become an ambassador of the game here. How did that conversation go to get back with Team Canada? And what ultimately led you down this path to get back with the red and white?
Well, the group of coaches we have makes it easy to want to go. I mean, not only the players who are great kids to work with, who are, grade 10, 11, 12, but the coaches we have who are guys I've played with or alongside for most of my professional career. And we make it fun. I think a big part of it, too, is the head coach, Greg Hamilton, whom we all played for coming through that program. And I feel like that one of the strengths of the program is its alumni, who not only give back monetary donations to the program, but donations of their time, too. And a lot of the guys who go back and guest coach or even, full-time coach are guys who came up and played for Greg and understand the importance of alumni to that program.
Yeah, and you talk about Greg Hamilton. Obviously, you're working with some of the greatest minds the country has to offer when it comes to the game of baseball. How have you seen kind of the program change since you were a youngster, since you went through it?
Well, there's a lot more commitment of time. For one, I'm impressed with these kids about how much time they spend away from home. And it's nothing to them. It seems to be the new normal for them to go spend 2 weeks on the road in March, 2 weeks on the road in April, same in May. You know, I try to talk to them, like, when do you ever go to school? And I know the school experience has changed a lot in the last 25 years since I was a junior high, but a lot of it, I'm sure, can be done online over email. But I bet their teachers have to go do a lot of extra work to help them get through it.
And obviously, school is a big part of you, especially when you went to UBC. We're going to get into that as well, but as we're on the topic of Canada and Team Canada, it's obviously not the first time you've worn the red and white colors as a pitching coach with the junior national team. More specifically, in 2015, you had the opportunity to pitch for the gold medal with the country in the Pan Ams. How special of an experience was that for you, considering it was on home soil?
Yeah, it was a goal of mine that year, for sure. I feel like if those Pan Ams hadn't been that year, my career might have ended a year early. It was my goal that year to spend time in the minor leagues and just stay sharp so that I could play for Canada that year in Toronto. And you know, the Blue Jays gave me a minor league contract. You know, of course, they let me come to spring training, and while I didn't make the team out of spring training, I figured I'd spend a year in Buffalo and end up in Toronto for the Pan Ams. But the Blue Jays even gave me a chance in the major leagues that year, which was a welcome surprise and a thrill for a Canadian kid, obviously, to play for Toronto. And not only that, in a year where the Blue Jays won their division for the first time in, I think, 20 years, that was cool to be a part of that team. But mainly that the goal of mine that year was to play in the Pan Am. You know, we certainly had a good team, and we certainly ended that tournament in the fashion I think no one's ever seen. To have a gold medal was a big thrill.
Yeah, do you still remember Pete Orr coming across the plate to score the game-winning run and kind of all the frenzy that happened afterwards?
Yeah, probably one of the coolest memories I have on a baseball field, I think. You know, not only the significance of winning the game, but in the way we did it.
Yeah.
And it just kind of, not really looking very professional. It was almost looking like a mosquito game where the balls are flying over. People are backing up. Guy scores from first, so the ball barely leaves the infield.
Yeah. Yeah, and I was in the crowd that night, actually. It was just incredible to see the amount of passion from the fan base as well, and just to see how far the game is growing in Canada.
Yeah, that was, I mean, it was cool to see in an event where there were so many other sports that people could be watching, and we weren't even really downtown Toronto. It was a drive out of town, out of Ajax, but the facility was top-notch, and the people came.
Yeah.
People were sure cheering for us. That was pretty awesome.
Yeah, and ultimately that year, I mean, you talked about it a little bit as well. You got to pitch for the Blue Jays. Was it kind of surreal to find yourself, as you said, you're born, it's a hometown team for you, to find yourself in Toronto for the final year of your career and during that spectacular run the Jays were on?
It was a little surreal. I think, you know, like I said, my last year playing, you know, I was a good minor league pitcher, and I had success that year, but I felt every time I stepped on a major league field, it was constantly being reinforced to me that I didn't have what I once had. I could still compete. I could still get people out, you know, for a guy who was in the bullpen and in long relief when, you know, you're really out there just to throw strikes and try and get out.
Right.
That was what I was there to do. That's what I was capable of, and I was happy doing it. There's a role for everybody, but down the stretch in September, you know, being one of the guys down in the bullpen, I had a good seat for a pretty awesome pennant race. I didn't pitch too much, but you know, when we were in tight games, you know, they had their guys, but it was a thrill for me, and a thrill for, I heard from a lot of people too. You know, they were watching the games from all across Canada. So I think to end my career with the Blue Jays,
Yeah, I think that was the year where Canadians were almost the most engaged. I mean, the last time we had a run like that was obviously 92-93, but 2015, 2016, baseball really took off in Canada. And I feel like sometimes enrollment in the game kind of takes off in north of the border because of how the Blue Jays are doing.
I think so, too. I think, well, when I was, say, 18 to 20 years old coming into professional baseball, you saw people my age coming up, and there was that's a result of the Blue Jays being so good in the early 90s. You know, if you look right now, I think active in the major leagues, there's maybe four or five Canadians.
Yeah.
So when I came in, there was probably 20, 22. So hopefully the Jays having that 3 or 4 years of success, you see registrations go up, hopefully. You know, and in another 15, 20 years, you'll see the results of all those extra good athletes playing baseball, and maybe you'll see more Canadians playing in the professional leagues.
Yeah, and I'd be doing kind of a disservice to the listeners if we didn't talk about your time in Colorado as well. Obviously, you were the ace of the Rockies after being a top 10 draft pick, as we're talking about, which is a difficult feat at the time, being from Canada. When you look back on your journey, pitching in the World Series, I mean, finishing third in club history in wins, second in innings pitched, fourth in strikeouts, what kind of comes to mind?
I have a ton of good memories from Colorado. You know, we made our home there for 9 years, spent winters there. I really felt like a Rocky, you know, and even though there was a year in there where I had left and come back, the Colorado still feels like home. You know, it was such a great place to live, such a great place to play. The fact that we got, you know, a couple of good years of sustained success and got to play in a World Series was a career highlight.
Mm-hmm.
I still enjoy going back there to do alumni stuff, and I've always considered Coors Field to be one of the more beautiful ballparks in all of baseball. You know, there was obviously some thin years there where we lost a lot of baseball games, but you know, for me to have been lucky enough to play in one place for as long as I did, I feel lucky. You know, I miss living in Denver, and I miss playing for the Rockies, but you know, I made some great relationships there too that I, you know, still keep in touch with some of those guys to this day.
Of course, and to hear, I mean, first Canadian to pitch in the first game of the World Series, that has to be a kind of a cool feat for you to have accomplished as well.
I think just to do that as a Rocky too, let alone a Canadian, I'm not sure the list of Canadians to have pitched in the World Series. I know Eric Gagne pitched in that very same game. I pitched game one.
Yeah, it was. I think it was the first Canadian to pitch to start the first game of the World Series. That's what I'm.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people forget Eric Gagne was on that team. It's probably the only World Series he got to win as a major leaguer, too. So,
yeah.
You know, I think for us, even though that series didn't go the way we wanted, in fact, we got dominated pretty good for four games. You know, the fashion in which we got to the playoffs that year and swept through the first two rounds of the playoffs, it felt like we won a lot more than we did, even though it didn't end up the perfect way.
As a pitcher in Colorado, I mean, obviously there are always talks about the Mile High air there. What can you say about pitching in Colorado and doing it with some success for the amount of time that you did?
Well, I could say it's different, for sure. I don't think anybody has pitched there would stand after their career and make excuses and say they could have been better than they were. I certainly won't do that, but it's certainly different.
Yeah.
The ball moves differently, and constantly all year long having to go back and forth. You know, you go from Colorado out east to sea level, or back to Colorado back out west to sea level, and constantly having to make small adjustments in your delivery or on your release point to make the ball move the way you need it to, you never really find that groove. And I think that's the most challenging part of being a pitcher for Colorado. Yeah, the ball flies farther. And the outfield is bigger. So a lot more doubles turn into triples. If you walk people, it can cost you more because balls are falling in front of infielders or in front of outfielders. Excuse me. So there are a lot of factors, but never really been able to back it up with another one, and I'm on that list. You know, I had one or two pretty good seasons as a Rocky. The others I consider were quite a struggle. And, you know, there's maybe one or two guys who have had sustained success as a Rocky. And I think Jorge De La Rosa comes to mind, Ubaldo Jimenez, maybe Aaron Cook. But other than that, there haven't been a lot of guys who have been able to do it year after year.
Right, yeah. Obviously, it's been a difficult feat for a pitcher. As you said, you can only name a handful of guys. But playing behind you, I mean, I read somewhere that you love playing with Troy Tulowitzki. Everything kind of came full circle once again when you got to suit up with him with the Blue Jays.
Yeah, I mean, who wouldn't want a Gold Glove shortstop playing behind you, right?
But yeah.
To be able to play with guys like Tulo and Todd Helton and Matt Holliday, I mean, these guys are not only gifted hitters, but, you know, two of them Gold Glove defenders and some of the most driven people you've ever seen. You can play baseball at the highest level and you meet all kinds of people, the talented ones who don't work and the non-talented ones who work their tail off. And when you get that combination of guys who are super talented and they work their tail off, you get the result like Tulo and Todd Helton and just a few others. To be able to play with them, you know, to watch them do what they do every day is, I consider it a privilege. You know, I think Tulo's stint in Toronto, you know, while a lot of people consider it disappointing, I feel bad for Toronto fans because they never got to see Tulo at his best. Tulo's had a lot of unfortunate injuries in his career that have derailed him, but I don't think I've ever met a more driven athlete whose sole concern was just winning. You know, you can say that about a lot of people, but most people, they're in it for themselves first and then the team second. And Tulo was that other guy. He would give every cent back that he made in baseball just to win a World Series. And I'm not sure I played with anyone else who I could say that about.
Yeah, and obviously he had glimpses of what you're talking about in Toronto, the way he attacked the game, the way he attacked his approach to the game. But ultimately, as you said, he never really came to where he was with the Colorado Rockies, and injuries happen, and that's just the nature of the game.
Yeah, and it's a shame, too, I think, because as good as he was for a number of years, it would have been nice for Toronto fans to have that, you know, and there's no way that doesn't leave a bad taste in Troy's mouth, too. I'm not in touch with Troy or anything, but just knowing him a little bit from playing with him for a lot of years, I would bet that's how he feels, instead of just leave a bad taste in his mouth that he wasn't able to live up to what he knows he can do.
And Jeff, in the end, obviously your career led you to be added to the Baseball Canada's RBC Wall of Excellence alongside Justin Morneau, Joey Votto, Ernie Witt, Dempster, Jason Day, and Russell Martin. I mean, what does that mean to you to be featured on a wall with those guys?
It's almost like I feel I don't belong with those names, but I understand it. It was certainly a high honor. I remember that it was the first banquet after I retired. You know, Baseball Canada let me know at the banquet that I attend every year that I was going to get put on the Wall of Excellence. And I really didn't believe it at the time. I thought it was kind of early, but certainly an honor that I don't know that I expected. But I certainly to be mentioned with those names, and I'm sure future names of guys I played with that will be on there, no doubt.
And I think it's safe to say that UBC kind of paved the way for you. You have your number retired there for good reason. Your numbers, I mean, impressive, 12-3, 0.92 ERA for Coach Terry McKeag. Set 11 new team pitching records, twice named NAIA First Team All-American, almost pushed Adam Loewen out as top Canuck drafted that year. When you got that phone call that you're going to be honored that way, what was your reaction?
Again, kind of blown away. I think, you know, play for these kinds of honors and awards, you know, and when I was at UBC as an 18-year-old, it certainly wasn't something that I was striving for.
Yeah.
But I think going to UBC, while at the time seemed like a fallback option for me, you know, I did my best to try to go play Division I schools, couldn't get any good scholarship offers, and, you know, at 18, graduating high school, I was a student first. I thought baseball was my ticket to university, and I was going to
Right.
And I still tell that to guys who are thinking of going to that program. You know, the baseball there has come a long way. The program is not what it was when I was there. It's a top-notch baseball program. But the education you're getting is really second to none in this country and compared to most institutions in the U.S. as well, I believe. So it gives kids a good option. I mean, it's not easy to get into, and it's a tough school, but certainly gives you both sides of both athletics and academics. And I'm not sure at the time I knew that, but certainly having gone there and then with the success I had and now seeing my number sitting on the outfield wall, it's kind of a thrill and something that I can at least show my kids and they can know that, you know, Dad was a pretty good ball player. They're too young to remember it.
Of course. I mean, nowadays with YouTube and everything, I'm sure they can look up your highlights whenever they feel like it as well, which is nice. But obviously, being a first rounder like you, coming from UBC, that says a lot about Canadian baseball. But when you look back on your career, obviously you've overcame injuries, designation, surgeries. If there is a player listening to this who kind of went through the same thing, what would you say to them?
I've had some talks with some players I played with or against or alongside about when it was time to quit. And, you know, for me, the time to quit was when I felt like I couldn't do it anymore. If you still feel like you can do it, but people are telling you you can't, then I don't think that's a reason to step away. But if you kind of know it in your heart that it's time, then it's time. But if you feel like you can still do it, I think, and if you're still willing to put the time in the winter, pregame, everything it takes to get ready to pitch or play or hit, then I don't think there's any reason to stop. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously there are things that tug at people, like family, children, time, travel, money. Those things have to be weighed. They were all weighed in my decision to quit playing. But everybody's situations are so different that getting traded, designated, even just getting hit around when you're on the mound, that happened to me plenty of times. And, you know, learning how to get over those obstacles is part of becoming a baseball player. That never stops till the day you quit, that's for sure.
Some great insight from Jeff Francis. And Jeff, thanks again for coming on. I appreciate this. And before I let you go, obviously I have to ask, you're a Toronto guy at heart, played 11 years in Colorado. If they're playing on the same night, which they do a lot, and you have the channel changer, which game are you watching?
Well, I'm watching the Blue Jays because the Rockies games don't come on here.
Yeah, that's a very diplomatic answer. That's nice.
But I do know that at the end of this month, the Rockies will be playing the Blue Jays. So
yeah,
I'll definitely be tuning in for those games.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, Jeff. I appreciate this, and have a great day, okay?
Okay, thanks a lot.
Of course, anytime.